Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Who would be a rugby pundit, eh? After a weekend like that, Six Nations, who knows what the results are going to be? Completely blew my mind. Got it the same in Super Rugby Pacific. All sorts of crazy results. Really competitive competitions as of the weekend. Seeing some interesting upsets. We're going to break into all of that as the show goes on. We're going to chat about who actually is the best team in the world. When you look at Ireland and South Africa, and then I suppose you've got New Zealand and France as well in there with them. A lot of chat online about that. We'll have a look at Super Rugby. We'll have a look at Opiki. We'll have a look at your comments and questions. And, of course, the tipping comp, where if you win our competition, you get a chance to come on the show as well. So before we get into the show, let's intro the guys. As ever, James Parsons. Who would be a tipster, eh?
Oh, it was a tough weekend. I was about to hang up the rifle and say, I don't think I could come in on Monday. Not many I picked, that's for sure. Got the power, though.
At Brent Hall, tipping the Crusaders is a dangerous deal these days. You don't want to go 0-16 this year.
Oh, I don't. So, yeah, it was, man, I think I had two picks. I think you guys all were the same as well, I think. Yeah, didn't get anything right. So, but it's great for the competition. I think rugby's back definitely in terms of the competitiveness of the competition. So, yeah, no good for if you're a Crusader fan, but great for the competition as well, though.
Absolutely outstanding.
Well, they've had a good run, those fans.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. They paid their dues. Like, it's time for the fish to stop biting, right?
God. I'm sure they'll come back. They'll be there or thereabouts at the point end.
Now, one of the big conversations we've seen online through the week, especially in the context of England beating Ireland, is who is the best team in the world? South African fans love to debate it. Irish fans love to debate it. We headed into the game on the weekend where Irish pundits were saying anything from Simon Zebo saying 35 plus against England at Twickenham to we had another pundit, who was it, Jamie Heaslip, saying that this Ireland team is compared to the momentum of the Carter and McCaw All Blacks who won two World Cups. We've heard all sorts of wonderful things, and then the Springboks are biting back saying, well, you haven't won a World Cup. I think Robbie Fleck, Victor Matfield, all sorts of former Springboks, Joel Stransky, they're all into it. So let's get into it. The best team in the world. To start off with, let's figure out how you figure that out. Because if it's about consistency, let's say over the last 5 years, that's one thing. Or is it winning the big games when it really matters and who cares about the rest, which appears to be the South African mentality?
I think it's hard to say who cares about the rest. That's the one hard thing for me, because in New Zealand and as an All Blacks team, the expectation is to win every test. So, but if you look back of our history and our struggles at the World Cup, we were always the most consistent team through that four-year period but couldn't get over that hurdle. So I genuinely do believe, for two reasons, I still think South Africa are the best team in the world, because, one, you're only as good as your last game, and that was a World Cup final win, and they haven't had an opportunity to present themselves, so I don't think they can go back. Mm. You know, when it mattered, they stand up. And, yes, their winning percentage, you know, through that four-year cycle is lower than most, but they also do probably test out their squads a lot more than other nations, depending on if players are in Japan or France or whatever. So they do use a number of players. And I mean, that could be a positive thing in terms of building that depth for the main events. But Ireland are, as the All Blacks used to be, the most consistent currently in between that, you know, I suppose, that time between World Cups.
So, Bryn, if you look at the stats, Ireland since 2020 have won 79%, France have won 78%, South Africa 69% and New Zealand 72% over that period since 2020. You know, try to keep it relatively recent. Ireland have won their last three games against the Springboks, including a World Cup win. Where do you stand on this?
Well, I think, yeah, if you want to look at the stats, 79% and Ireland having the will over South Africa, but like we've talked about, the World Cup, whoever's the winner of the World Cup is the best team in the world. I'm sorry. You know, there's consistency in everything, and there's been times in New Zealand where we were the best team consistently for a long period of time, but not been able to get the World Cup wins. But, you know, I think for me, South Africa have gone back-to-back. Yes, they don't get it right. Some parts in that four-year cycle, they rotate or they don't get the results of winning the rugby championship or anything like that. But when it comes to push and shove, they're the defending and two-time champions in the last eight years. So for me, it's the South Africans. But if you're going to go on percentages and around in between the World Cups, we've talked around a lot with Ireland, how consistent they are. And the brand of footy that they have played has been world-leading. But coming to the big events, they haven't got the job done. So I'd go South Africa.
I think if you ask any player, they'll take a World Cup. It'd be interesting, you know, potentially to ask, you know, Goldie or someone that's here at Sky, that would have they taken the 95 World Cup win and, you know, lost a few tests in between that four-year cycle? I think most people would take that World Cup win.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. I mean, that tour in South Africa where they finally won.
Yeah, 96.
I mean, that was pretty big historically, and in comparison to a World Cup, probably harder to win, I could probably argue, but... Yeah.
And it meant a hell of a lot because it was the year after they obviously lost that final. Mm. I think everyone would want to win a World Cup, and maybe 79% is not that high though when you think about it. When the All Blacks were dominating that 4-year period, they were definitely 85-86% in terms of that winning percentage. So I was quite surprised, but I actually like that stat purely because it shows how tight international rugby is, and that's as you mentioned before, that unpredictability of result is what engages fans a lot more.
Well, and heading into this particular game, the idea was that the Irish results are actually predictable. They were scoring 30-plus. They were winning everything. They were going to England, who apparently can't attack, were focusing on a rush defence that they couldn't get right, Bryn. And then, hey presto, England turn up. And, I mean, Ireland pushed them hard, but they won it.
Well, I think that comes back to the competitiveness of that Six Nations at the moment. I think it's the world leading competition in terms of international rugby. You look at Italy over Scotland. You know, we talked around Scotland obviously trying to get that win, but you know, Italy showed that their growth in the last probably not just before the World Cup, but the new coaching regime that's come in has given them a belief. So, yeah, I just think at this time, when it comes to international rugby, there's just so many teams on their day that can win. And you look at England on the weekend. We'll go more around the Six Nations, but. Yeah, it's a great time for international rugby. A lot of teams are really competitive, and hopefully it continues for the next couple of years.
Less is more. Less is more. Don't practice attack.
Yeah.
And then it comes to life.
Are you quoting yourself?
Yeah, I am. I'm just doing a humble brag. But it's not very humble, is it? But, I mean, their attack came to life, and there are some key stats that Ireland, lost. You know, England really matched in some instances, dominated the collision area, which just hasn't been the case for this Irish team in the Six Nations. When they beat France, they dominated France, they held them to sort of 32% gain line in that carry stat, whereas England had 50%. So one out of two carries you're getting across the gain line is pretty efficient against that Irish D. So that was a big point, and that doesn't allow you to sort of set and put that line speed pressure on and force those skills. And I thought... England really looked to play. Probably the only time I would have liked them to play a little bit more was, I don't know if you remember, but when there was the advantage and Ford took the pot drop goal. I don't understand why they've got such a great skill set in the air, like a little crossfield kick or a dink in behind. I just don't know why the drop goal, yes, at the last play, definitely take that, Marcus Smith, but I would like them to just sort of stretch themselves when it is that advantage to try and score some tries. Because they're so comfortable going in threes, but they scored tries and they won test matches. So they've definitely shown they can do it.
I think a lot of their shape was actually really good in terms of playing really flat. Ford was flat to the line. He had three or four outside him and been able to pick runners when they were going forward. And then I thought, you know, Alex Mitchell, in terms of their speed of ball, being able to then play on top of teams was was a lot more. And I think obviously their fullback and wingers, I think, you know, they brought a bit of flair and X factor in terms of their ability to beat defenders one-on-one and get over their advantage line. So yeah, look, I was thoroughly impressed. I know we talked around their defense, and I think it's going to take a bit of time. There were a lot of, you know, there were times in that game, you look at James Lowe's second try, then when Slade comes out of that line, just trying to obviously bring that line speed pressure, but it is going to take a bit of time. But I did see a massive shift in terms of their defense. They were coming in very, very hard, very similar to the South Africans. And I think in time, you'd have to think if they're going to continue that, it's going to get a lot harder to be able to try and beat them defensively. But Jim, there was one thing that I was surprised around there. I think knowing and with how the Irish, they adapt on the run, they didn't use their attacking kicking game. You know, Crowley and co didn't look to try and get to that space where you did see it a lot. And I think, you know, sometimes with their shape, wingers aren't in that space, but there is a loose forward. So maybe, you know, moving forward, a loose forward might be able to be in those, see those pitches a little bit better because there was space to try and get there, which they didn't execute on the weekend.
Ben Earl, Jim, is a guy, every time I've watched him play for England, he stands out. Like, I don't feel like people talk about him in the same way they talk about Savia or Aldrit, but he is a quality loose forward, particularly with ball in hand.
Yeah, and I thought Underhill was really good as well, especially defensively. But Earl's work rate, 20 carries, 12 tackles, and when you've got a hot hand, you want to give it to these guys, but you know, he does need a little bit of support because that's a high carry and tackle count. He was second in the tackles and obviously first in the carries, but he's an athlete. You know, when he breaks through that line, he's just got great balance, great strength, and a great explosive feed. I thought Lawrence was great as well, and I really enjoyed Furbank. I thought at 15, he's quick, he's rapid. So some new blood coming through, I think, and finding, because that Lawrence performance is a little bit like the Tuilagi performance. You know, when they dominated the All Blacks, they really dominated that collision and got across that gain line and allowed them to play with that pace. And they won by 1 point, so Ireland still fought well, even though they didn't play as well as I'd like. They pushed them to the end. So it's not like, I suppose England are saved, but 28 defenders beaten on attack. Like, these are stats you sort of normally see in single figures for England. So they were great both sides of the ball.
So there's plenty to talk about, I suppose, going into this last weekend where Wales will play Italy, Ireland will play Scotland, and France will play England. The competition is still on the line if Scotland can get up.
Well, they'll need bonus point, but
yeah.
It would have been nice if they'd got the result against Italy. I know that's, for Italy's fans, it's great, but it would have really brought some tension if it was just a win-lose scenario. Mm. So they're going to have to chance their arm. And look, they chanced their arm against Italy. They just didn't, I suppose, get reward for the amount of ball they had, the amount of, offloads, defenders beaten, clean breaks. It was all there. They just couldn't get enough points. And maybe similar to Ireland, maybe just expecting it was going to happen. And Italy hung in there and they hung really tough. But also when their opportunities presented, they came away with a full complement of points, whereas, you know, I don't think Scotland would be happy, especially a Finn Russell side, to go into the 22 10 times and only come away with four tries versus Italy 5 times for 3.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big difference.
Bryn, I feel like every time we talk Scotland up, they disappoint us the week after.
Yeah.
Like, it is year on year on year, it is just the way they've got so much potential.
I think this one probably hurts the most in terms of this result. I think, you know, the last couple of times it's been, you know, against Ireland or an England or a France, that they've kind of had the opportunity to win a game like that in a big moment. But I think this one, we were expecting them, considering how they've gone and the kind of, I guess, the praise that we're having for them in this competition, thinking that it'll go into the last round, which it still does. They still need a bonus point. But yeah, they'll be pretty disappointed. And I think, you know, look, in that first 30 minutes, you know, they had 72% of possession. And I think it just comes back to the ability of them not being able to execute and the chances that they did have. It just seemed like they were playing a little bit frantic and not as clinical and ruthless as they usually are. And to Italy's credit, look, there were a lot of times in that game where you'd have to say the Italians would fold over. You know, the Scottish started really, really well. They came back, you know, Scotland had their moments again, but they had that fight to be able to come back into the game. And so, you know, that's very, you know, we don't expect that from Italy. And so for them to be able to do that, hopefully this will leapfrog them now to where they have belief, I think most importantly, that they can do it. And, you know, hopefully they have one more game. And then throughout the duration of the next couple of years, we're going to see an improved version of Italy, because I think their attacking ability and their breakdown work and even defensively, just moving and being able to be in game consistently, it's much improved from the Rugby World Cup. So, yeah, great result for Italy.
Let's have a look at this weekend's games then, because I suppose, I mean, Wales v Italy is by the bye. Well, let's just say who you think is going to win that first before we get into the two games that matter for the championship. What do you think, Chip?
I'll go Wales.
Wales?
Where's that being played? That's at Millennium, eh?
Cardiff, yeah.
Oh, man, the Italians were impressive. They've been impressive the last 2 weeks. No, I'll back. I'll go Italy.
Yeah.
Just been really impressed with the last two games. But the last two games that they've played, it wins in any stadium. So whether they're able to do it one more time, I'm not too sure, but have taken confidence the last two games. So I'll pick Italy.
Superb. Okay, so then there's Ireland, Scotland. Yeah, Ireland win it, they win the whole thing. Can you see them going down against Scotland in this game?
No. At home, losing to England, I just think they're going to be a better... Had they potentially beaten England and Scotland had won big, you'd probably... And I just think Scotland are going to give them a lot of opportunity because they've got to score tries. They have to get that bonus point. And as we've seen, the more rugby you play, the more opportunity you're giving because you turn the ball over and you're giving the ball back in a pretty prime spot in the field.
Do you think Scotland will take that mindset? We've got to score the bonus point? What? Or is that something where you take it once you've got yourself ahead? Like, how do you play that?
Well, it's all or nothing. For me, it would be, I'd be going, any penalties, I'd be going to the corner early. Try and get them under your belt. Then you can play the tactical kicking game and threes and so forth. It's all or nothing. And I think, look, they've got the perfect guy, Finn Russell, to do it. If he has a day, this can happen. But I think off the back of the England loss... This will be a razor-sharp Ireland team.
And they're going to need to win 7+. They can't give a bonus point to Ireland.
No, I think... True. But I think also as well... Like,
I didn't think about that.
I think Ireland will come back with a vengeance and being pretty disappointed. But, you know, if you do look at Scotland and even on the weekend, the amount of ball that they did have, they make a lot of opportunities for themselves. So I don't think there's going to be a problem in terms of them being able to try... put the Ireland team under pressure. I think there will be opportunities, but I think what it's been like the last 2-3 years in big games, they haven't been able to take them. So they'll know that they'll have to score 4 tries like you guys are talking about, but they do have the ability with Finn Russell and the way that they do play, they're going to have an opportunity to score some points. It's whether they're able to do it under pressure. But in saying that, I still think Ireland, they'll come back after their review and they'll be a lot sharper and there'll be a little bit more steel, I think, in that breakdown, which I think they lost on the weekend against England.
They're going to have to be more dominant on defence, though, as well. Like, they let Italy get 50% or 49% gain line. They still tackled at 91%, but the tackles are passive. Like, Ireland was, 39% against England. Like, they were physically met and put behind the advantage line. If Scotland sit and wait, and 91%, I get it, is good, but if you're still getting over the gain line, you're making tackles, they eventually go over the try line. So... they will need to show a bit of starch defensively as well.
Yeah. And then there's the France-England game and all these two games, kind of the results work concurrently to whatever's going to happen as far as who wins this championship. France at home against England. France are a touch of a mixed bag. Where does this go?
For me, I'm going to need like a team naming situation.
Yeah.
Because the French will score points, so it's similar... for England going into the Ireland game, England away from home. I thought George Ford was good, don't get me wrong. I just think Marcus Smith could really open up this attack off the back of that performance. It would be hard to drop him after, he sort of orchestrated and then Marcus Smith had a good impact off the bench. So I think England would probably be the more secure bet if I was going to bet on them, because you just don't know which French side and they gave a lot of opportunity on the weekend, and I just think England might have the better ability to pounce on those opportunities than Wales did.
Yeah. Interestingly though, the French, when we looked at those stats we were looking at before, against the other top four nations, Ireland, New Zealand and South Africa, actually have the best average winning percentage over the last 5 years against the top teams. Better than Ireland, better than New Zealand, better than South Africa.
They are missing two critical ingredients.
That's true. There's no doubt about that. So, Bryn, where do you see this going, France v England?
Yeah, it's hard because I think, obviously if it's with Dupont and Intermac, then I think that's an easy call for the French, especially being at home. But I think with the way that England are playing, and especially how they did on the weekend, if they can replicate that and they'll have a little bit more time to try and get that line speed defense and get those connections, which I think is going to be pretty important against the French. They can score from anywhere, whether it's off counter-attack or just in general the way with the offload game is. So I think the physicality and the breakdown, which they were able to do against the Irish and stop them and been able to, I guess, force passes under pressure is going to be really important against the French. And I think they can marry up both games. They can have that attacking game, and then if they feel they need to go into that kind of suffocating kicking game and effort areas, then they can go into that as well. But what I do love about the English team is their intent, and everything they do has a great mindset, and it's 100% all the time. So when you've got a team that has that intent and mindset consistently, good things tend to happen. So I'll go the English to get the result against the French on the weekend.
Well, that's what we're looking at for the Six Nations. Let's move on to Super Rugby. The Chiefs against the Reds, amazing result. The Reds were very good against the Hurricanes the week before. They are a very strong side and they appear to be on the up under Les Kiss. But I don't think people saw this win over the Chiefs quite coming, 25-19. Why did you like the Reds?
Well, they played to their strengths, didn't they? And I think they defended at world-class levels. You know, 5 penalties, 91% tackle, and it was about pretty much 50-50% possession. So they really matched the Chiefs' attack. I'm not sure, and it's not nothing on Joshuani, but I felt like when Sean moved back to fullback, their attack mojo, you know, he just has that extra bit of pace and found the way, because the Chiefs still got 14 clean breaks. They did get across the gain line a lot of the time, but the scrambled D and the desperation of this Queensland side put in that maul into context. Like, they have very, very good forward pack. Like, that maul's, it's almost like the Brumbies. Remember when Pocock was scoring about 5 tries a game? It seems to be pretty hard to stop. So they've got some assets there, and I think they're probably only going to get better and better. You know, Les Kiss's touches are only going to get better and better on this squad, and a lot of belief. You can see how much it means to them as well, how much they celebrated. For Bryn and I, we obviously picked top 5 being New Zealand sides, but I think that's been thrown on its head dramatically. Even the Tars probably will feel that Highlanders game got away on them, and these Aussie teams are really, you know, stepping up.
They are.
Yeah.
And what could the Chiefs have done better to been closer into that game and taken it out?
You know, they had a lot of mistakes in that game. I think they had in the first half, the first 40 minutes, they had, you know, 10 turnovers and 7 handling errors. You know, so they weren't being able to be as ruthless as they were in the past 2 games. And I think defensively the Reds did really, really well. I think, you know, the face play shift, the way that I've talked about with the Chiefs, you know, they ask a lot of questions, but I think connections wise, I think on the edge with their centers and their wingers and everybody being on the same page, even though the Chiefs weren't able to score because I think their own execution errors probably cost them. But, you know, in a lot of that time, they defended really, really well. And I thought, you know, the likes of, you know, McDermott, I thought Harry Wilson was energetic and at his best self, and I think being able to win that contact area with Udu as well. I think they've got a hard-nosed forward pack. I know Morgan Tirunuri talked around their forward pack probably being the weakest in the Australian competition, but I think, man, you look at the forward pack, man, they get through their work. Comes to line out more, they've got a very strong set piece, they get into that 22-metre zone, but they're not afraid to go long phases, both defensively and on attacking-wise with their forward pack. So, look, I think the Reds, you know, they would be pretty proud of that performance. And I think, you know, it's honestly, I wasn't expecting after 3 rounds, these Australian teams to be where they are right now. So, yeah, it's really good for the competition, I believe. And especially the Chiefs, who we thought were going to be unbeatable for this weekend alone. You know, so
you mentioned that phase play. It felt like sometimes Josh and Damien were both at first receiver. And it's like, you know, they've got so used to Sean just playing his fullback role and it's Damien's ship. And I just felt at times Damien was actually the second pivot out the back a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And whether that confusion of having that dual playmaker role just didn't quite suit the way their mojo had been and the way they were playing.
We've had questions about that in recent weeks, haven't we, about pure fullbacks versus the confusion of dual playmakers. And there you go.
It is a big change, because they are total different players, Josh and Sean. You know, if you look at the last 2 years, Sean's role has been pretty important in the success of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So you'd probably have to... And again, Josh is playing really well. Don't get me wrong. He's killing it. But Sometimes, you know, they say styles make fights, and it seems to be when Sean's at 15, he really does have that injection from the back, and he owns that. He doesn't try to be a first receiver. And sometimes it's just not your night. Mm. Like that grubber kick. I mean, I know McLachlan Phillips is a talent, but that was just the most unfortunate bounce ever.
Yeah, it was.
For Coombs Fabley. So there are sometimes it's just not your night. And I do think the error count is always high with New Zealand teams when you go to Queensland. Bryn, you'll know this. The humidity, yeah. The ball is just like soap. And especially in that first 40, you know, 11 visits into the 22, two tries, that's just not Chiefs standard. But it's actually really, really hard to control that ball. And maybe just tried too hard. Even that knock on over the line, I think it was Tupou Vaa'i, you know, just dropping the ball. And it's just that greasy nature. Had they been in Hamilton, it's probably nowhere near as challenging. Yeah.
Get those Tony Brown, Byron Keller gloves on. Wouldn't you ever played with gloves on?
No, man, my dad wouldn't let me.
Mikey Harris was a big fan of the gloves.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, big fan of the gloves.
Well, he played over in Brisbane for a while. Did he play with them when he was there?
I don't know. He must have. Well, he always did with Harbour.
Yeah.
Hell of a setup. I think he even nipped the fingers off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly in cricket, I always played with the batting gloves, with the inners with them nipped off.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
just to release a bit of moisture.
Better feel through the fingertips. Not that it helped me score runs.
Yeah. You know, but you felt good.
But I looked good when I went out there with the appropriate equipment on.
Yeah.
Always. So before we move on, the Reds are a really interesting outfit. You know, if they get a win this weekend, and let's say that the Crusaders get up for their first win and beat the Canes, the Reds could well be on top of the table. And I don't think anyone saw that coming. We caught up in the pre-season with Reds captain Tade McDermott to ask him a little bit about what they're trying to achieve as a side under Les Kiss.
Well, mate, before we get going, let's talk about, you got a new coach, Les Kiss, coming in this year. Obviously, highly experienced over in Europe. How has that changed the way that you guys are doing things, that influence that he has from his time over there?
Yeah, things are very different. Obviously, the way kind of Thorny saw the game and the way Les sees the game are a little bit different. He's kind of built on those foundations that Thorny laid for us. And, I guess that kind of style we saw with London Irish, he's brought that across and he tied it into our... I guess, when we're playing good footy, our DNA, we've got offloads, we've got boys playing free and, expressing themselves. So we saw 30 minutes of what we're capable of in our trial match on the weekend. But I guess, for us, it's just about having the confidence to really be aggressive with our style of play, testing teams in those wider channels. Mate, it's exciting.
You are obviously... are a key cog for Queensland, and I suppose 9 and 10 is critical, but 10, there's a little bit of a logjam. Looking at sort of the pre-season first few rounds, who do you think will get the nod there?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the experience of James O'Connor, and then you've got three young fellas nipping at his heels, so I think Harry McLachlan Phillips is in a really good place at the moment. He's positioned himself well with a couple of good performances. But then you've also got guys like Tommy Liner, world-class goal kicker, a great boot, and Lawson, who's a great communicator. So yeah, we're lucky we've got those guys there. We've got depth in that jersey, and it'll be interesting. I think Harry is the front runner, but we'll see how we go.
We obviously know a lot about O'Connor and I suppose a little bit about Liner, but Harry, what is his strength? Is he flat to the line, or is he a tactical kicker?
He just takes the... the defence on all the time. So, flat of the line, makes good.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Decisions, but Benny's a natural runner of the ball. So I guess probably the most similar to James.
Yeah. And I suppose James played a little bit of 12, and I'm pretty sure he played 12 against the win you guys had against the Chiefs. And tactically, his kicking that night were around those 50-22s were the absolute weapon that probably gave you the ability to get that one.
Yeah, I mean, James is a talented player. And like you said, he's experienced. He knows when to kick, when to run. And he's been really good around Harry's development at 10, teaching him those intricacies that maybe he didn't have at the start of his career. And it's great to see him giving back to Harry. And it's only going to be good for our team.
If there's one person in your squad that he's got a man crush on, it's Fraser McWright.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us that he's not perfect? Is there something about Fraser McWright that isn't perfect?
there's a bit, I don't know if I can say much.
I like him even more now. Yeah.
He ticks all the boxes.
He is exceptional. And what I refer to him is he's almost a young Michael Hooper in terms of his game style. He's got the ability to impact a game on attack, ability to do it at the breakdown defensively, and he's a leader by the sounds, you know, not only on the field but off it. Well, in all areas.
Yeah, in all areas. But I think Fraser, he's brilliant, mate. He's one of those players that he's an absolute workhorse, but he always just pops up around the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he can smell those opportunities before they've even happened. So he's got that rugby brain that I guess he's saying Michael Hooper had it. And he's probably, to be fair, he's probably modelled his game off Michael Hooper, given how good Hoops was. So he's a leader in defence, attack, and he's a crucial cog in our wheel.
Now, we're talking with all of the teams, a runner straight challenge. Who is the person you'd least like to run a straight at? But we thought for a halfback we might switch it up. Who is the person you'd back yourself running it straight at in Super Rugby?
Probably Darcy Swain from the Brumbies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love that.
Might end up in a coffin.
Yeah, he's obviously pretty popular in New Zealand as well.
he's highly loved over here. The fan club's over in the corner there. Wait,
I call good halfbacks. He's short of a jam.
Cocky Aussie halfbacks, eh? Running at a big bruising forwards and thinking they'll get away with it.
Bryn, you and Artie?
No, not me, mate. Not me.
He won't be doing that. Now, one of the most interesting things what's come up from the last week is Kevin Molloy, the Super Rugby chair, talking about opening up player movement within Super Rugby. His hypothetical was Artie Savia maybe playing over in Australia and how that'll affect the landscape of the competition, probably make it look like other sports competitions in the world rather than being so inwardly focused within each nation, considering the All Blacks policies for selections, etc. That's why it's gone that way. We also had an email, and we appreciate your emails. Please email us at aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz from Winston Stowers. He also sent a very similar message the week before on YouTube. So, Winston, glad we can finally get to your question. We keep talking about stronger and stronger Australia teams. What do you think if New Zealand rugby expanded the selection for ABs into the whole competition, allowing for some of our players to get time starting in Oz, who might have been on the bench here, allowing more options for us across the board as New Zealand. Marquee players within a salary cap similar to the NFL could make the competition interesting and would allow us to see new combinations across the board. Bryn, what do you think of that as a concept? Is it something that this competition needs?
Just a clear no for me. I don't think it does. I think when this was first talked about, it's because obviously the competition of the Australians and the Super Rugby Pacific weren't up to par. But I think with how, you know, to think the direction now with, we talked around the Reds and even the Waratahs and, you know, the teams performing now, I don't think it should be opened, I think. I think it's quite cheeky on the Australian side to try and bring in some New Zealand players that are obviously playing at a high level and obviously are within the All Blacks environment. But no, I just think there's too many things that shouldn't be done, and I think that's one of them. They're not, you know, getting the best New Zealand talent going to Australia and trying to help them out.
Hart says no, because you know, depth is a, with even Moana Pacifica coming in, the talent pool depth has shrunk. You've got MLR taking, you know, I suppose that sort of replacement player pool. But in saying that, unlocking the Australian market in terms of engagement, much bigger, and the opportunity to grow the competition, something like this potentially could be the key to doing that, and getting, I suppose, Australian fans back engaged into Super Rugby. So I think it would have to be marquees. I would be disappointing to see players that may be on the bench going over, because I think we've seen that with the Rebels and the Force, and it hasn't worked.
Chase Tiatia,
it's yeah, and it's not going to, it's not going to do the job what I think Kevin Malloy is hinting at, and that would be eyes on our game. So those marquee opportunities potentially, but selfishly, no. Like, I'd be devastated, say, Rico signed for the Waratahs and left the Blues as a Blues fan.
Yeah.
You know, like, it would cut me.
And saying that, we're more than happy to see Pablo Mateta come and play for the Crusaders. Like, it is, you know, we like it the other way. Bryn, you know?
Not necessarily. Sometimes I feel like that's taking an opportunity for someone that's been around.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sold on that.
Not 100%
either.
On that.
No. Only like in the sense that there is absolutely no one, and there's, you know, it's too early to just throw someone in sink or swim. Get that. Totally understand that. But trying to keep our talent and keeping every spot available. But again, that brings eyes to the game. So I'm sitting on the fence here, which is very rare, because on one side I want us to win and I want a New Zealand team to win every time, but I understand we've got to change something to get our game. And like, you look at the weekend, you know, rugby's back, you know. I genuinely believe that. Like, I was in shock, and, you know, you start reading deeper into the games and how other people saw it, and, you know, it's not just like, oh, yeah, there it goes again.
Yeah, you'd love a bit of Fraser McWright in the Blues.
Oh, I would. I would. How good is he, man? Is he like the support line king? Like, seriously, it's like, honestly, as soon as... I actually, on that note, I thought Vunivalu was outstanding. I had a bit of a crack at him last week saying, get off your wing and do some work like Mark Talia. And he stayed on his wing when he needed to, and he came and got engaged and freed up through that midfield a little bit. But, yeah, McWright.
Yeah.
How good. Just like...
A 1-2 punch with Dalton Papali'i at the Blues. Oh, you'd be a big fan.
Oh, I don't know. The only concern there as a hooker is the height and the line out. So yeah, there's a few things to weigh up.
Yeah.
Maybe Dalton go to Queensland and Fraser can come to us just as a sense test. Just test it out.
Absolutely. Well, what, Aussie, would you like to bring into a Kiwi side then?
I don't actually know off the top of my head. Who's someone that's running around that I really would like? Probably a Taniela Tupou. I think he'd be a good one to bring in. I think considering that he was at Sacred Heart, he was at Sacred Heart as well, and having that New Zealand connection. But yeah, I think he's one guy in Australia that has that superstar power. And I think in the right environment, I think the Crusaders wouldn't mind him right now. So yeah, Taniela Tupou coming to the Crusaders wouldn't be a bad option, actually.
Let's talk a little bit about the Blues and the Hurricanes. Hurricanes got up 29-21. Certainly wasn't picked by us, but the Hurricanes are Bryn's dark horse for this whole competition, so possibly pricked by Bryn as well. They made a big decision to go with a 6-2 split. They copped two HIAs to their two backs, and next thing you know, they've got a halfback playing on the wing, Bryn. What did you make of that decision? I mean, we've seen the Springboks win with it, but geez, you're rolling the dice.
Oh, well, that's it, isn't it? If you have a 6-2 split or a 7-1 split, you know, as coaches, you just don't bank on them getting injured. And the fact that it happened in the first 15 minutes and you had a 9 playing on the wing, not just more so in the attacking side, it's obviously there's a lot of things that go with being on the attack, but the defensive side, you look at the ability of them being able to score a couple of times at Funaki and fullback. Who was the reserve fullback? Chipper, what's his name?
Forbes.
Forbes, they went on the same guy. And so, you know, whether they did the what ifs in terms of like defensively of what his role might look like, but yeah, there's just a lot of things that come with having that 6-2 split. And you saw that on the weekend with Funaki, who I actually thought, considering hasn't played a lot of winger, you know, did his job, you know, pretty well considering. So
I just felt, could they have split them up? I just felt the poor guys just were like defensively it is hard. Like attacking wouldn't have been an issue. Everyone knows attacking, they'll know their role there. But defensively, I think that's where it was showing up. And it's no fault of theirs because defence, as we spoke about England, it's reps. You know, like, and sometimes they both jammed on the same player and then one held off and one shot. And the Hurricanes were too good. They just kept going there. They knew that that's where they could test them and they got the full reward. And a little bit of freakishness from Naholo.
Yeah, just on there, like an example of that, Jip, you know, with the winger, and we talked about it before we came on air around, you know, with the winger, Mark Talia defends in that first channel right next to the line out more. And it's been able to just, you know, why would you not put Funaki in and around that area, which is, you know, it's very similar for a nine to slip in just outside the ruck, outside the mall, and then have Mark Talia play both sides of the wings and trying to help out in that terms, especially when it comes to, you know, line out strikes close to the line where that 13 winger is on in 15. It's really hard to defend.
Massively. And it's that kick space as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just think maybe, just it's so unfortunate. I still think they fought well to be in it, but it almost felt when that happened, the Hurricanes grew an arm and a leg. And there was some brilliance, though, as well. Like, Kenny Naholo's performance was pretty...
He could beat a man.
Yeah. He's just getting better and better. And you know, between him and Tavatava Nawai, proving to be two of the hardest men to stop, and Sevu Reese as well. Yeah. I thought Sevu was outstanding.
And Ravu Tamanda.
Yeah. He wins. Yeah. He wins, actually.
He's so good.
He is so good.
Man.
So is that
incredible.
What's your top five look like? Top five players who are impossible to tackle?
Tavatava Nawai is in there, and Naholo. I reckon Parisi's pretty like when he's
great
fit,
game on the weekend.
When he's fit, he's an explosive athlete. He would leave someone like me at sea. Who else is Cam Royga's proving hard to put down just to get a mention for my boy Cam. I don't know. What do you think, Bryn?
I reckon Ravu Tomada. Guy. You can't stop He's so fast and so explosive. And you look at that try that he scored on the weekend, like, you know, he had no right to score that. And that kind of small window, that wasn't in terms of like how he usually is with the speed, and it shows how fast he is, but his ability to be able to beat that defender with strength and then footwork. Yeah, gee, he's a full package, I reckon. I love watching him play for the Fijian Drua.
Braden Yossi's another one, actually. Yeah. He just seems to always break a tackle.
Yep, he's very, very strong. And we're obviously talking about other stuff, but man, how good was Ruben Love?
Yeah.
As well on the weekend. Geez, we talked around it a little bit earlier around the fullbacks and with Will Jordan being injured, I think he has just grown so much in the past couple of weeks. I think his distribution, Jip, under pressure, I think, you know, that's a big part in terms of how the attacking game is at the moment, especially trying to get that ball to the whip. I think, arguably, you'd have to say in the first 3 weeks of the competition, he'd be the best guy to get that ball away under pressure. And I think he had 3 tries on the weekend, and we know his attacking ability, but I think as a run, pass, kick, and even defensively, man, he's having a hell of a start to this year.
I tell you what, I did some work on the weekend with Goldie, and he's a big Ruben Love fan.
Is he?
Like he's a hard man to impress in that back three area, and he was saying he reckons he could have been the difference to beating, and he picked the Canes. He said, I think they're the sleeper, they'll beat the Blues. But yeah, I think his ability to get that ball away, and what I like about the Hurricanes as well, similar to the Chiefs when Sean's at 15, they've got clear roles. It's Brett Cameron's ship. And you inject when you can, but it's very, very clear that calmness of Brett Cameron is critical to getting their game going.
He kicks good goals.
Yep. No, he's very good. He's actually a fantastic fit for the X factor that is in and around him.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't have the X factor, it's more he just has that calm and composure. And he's another player that he's never inactive. Like, if you watch the good first receivers in behind that forward pod, they're always engaged. I was talking to Aaron Cruden about it at the Rebels Minor Pacifica game, and I was like, you know, my biggest frustration as a forward is if I'm here and you're not active out the back, defence is like, oh, we're just going to tee off on you.
Yeah.
You know, like, because sometimes they're like out here organising this, and he goes, he used to pride himself, Aaron said, I prided myself on always being there, and he said to his ball players, he goes, even if you don't, if I don't call it and you think it's on, you put it there, I'll be there. And he was like, I was religious on it, I would always be there. And it creates opportunity, and it gives the player with the ball confidence to make a decision and pull the trigger. I thought it was really interesting, like, he would, and if he wasn't there and it went, he would always, you know, put his hand up sort of thing. So it was very interesting, because Brett Cameron's very similar. He's always engaged, he's always active, so you have to mark him. Mm. Sort of like Mwanga used to do. Mwanga would always go out the back outside that forward tip runner. They're always the best tens, because it just makes it so much harder. But also, you know, if a Yossi's there, or, you know, a Karifi, or, you know, it gives them the, or an Almua, to just bloody, you know, go after it, and then open up that little pass out the back.
Let's switch from the Crusaders, the champions of Super Rugby, through to Opiki, where Mata 2, the champions of Opiki, are also having a really tough time. It's, don't know what's happening in Christchurch right now, but it's not going well, Bryn. They lost to the Hurricanes Power. Now, you picked it. 36-29 to the Power. A game with the Power coming in after, you know, a fair bit of media coverage during that week. And to put on a performance like that was quite a performance.
It was impressive, but, you know, this is the one pick I probably got right. That was, I suppose, ambitious. For most, but what I saw live against the Manawa, man, like, you knew they had, talk about set piece, good defence, great around the breakdown. They had all that, they've got all the ingredients there. And look, Matatu still pushed them. I mean, it was equal level peggings going into the last 5 minutes, so it wasn't easy, but yeah, some of their stats were outstanding. 60% of the time over the gain line. They've got some really outstanding midfielders. Shakira Baker was great.
Oh, yeah.
On the weekend. I'm really a big fan of the two kings, obviously the first five, but the loose forward, blindside flanker as well. Like, not big in stature, but they get into their work and not afraid. There's a lot to like, and a potential finals berth.
Mm.
Looming for them. So, that battle with the Blues is going to be interesting. Because the Blues probably let one go, if we're being honest, in terms of opportunities.
Yeah.
It's very rare you see the Manawa with 26 turnovers. Previous week 9.
Yeah.
9 turnovers against the Poa, and they were pushed hard there. But their defence saved them. That goal line D in that first half, how the Blues didn't score, I don't know. Like, there's this one tackle of, watch the replay, of Luke O'Connor. I can't remember, someone picks up and dummies from the Blues, and the rock shot off there.
Yeah.
So it's like, in my head, I was like, oh, this is try time. Boom, fuh.
What do you mean the rock shot off?
The defender that's right by the breakdown sort of fell for the dummy, went out here, and Luke O'Connor just slipped in here and just crushed her. It was impressive. Some great pressure through the midfield. Steinmetz was outstanding. So it was a defensive win. Certainly wasn't an attacking win for the Manawa.
The Blues, Bryn. Silly errors, charge down conversions, crazy plays off penalty kicks, bring it back into touch when they didn't need to. Unforced error for that possible equalising try. Just lack of composure, just across the board.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, you know, considering, you know, I probably thought the Chiefs would actually be doing a little bit more comfortable, but I think the Blues, in hindsight, if they get them again in a semi-final, final stage, they'll know that, you know, they made a lot of unforced errors and probably should have won that game. You know, you look at that last passage of play where, you know, the reserve halfback comes on and, you know, it's a little knock on there, but that was kind of the recipe, I think, for the whole game. They put the Chiefs under a lot of pressure, and they did make uncharacteristic mistakes throughout the lot of that game, the Manawa, but, you know, the Blues were able to do that with the way that they were playing. And so the composure, I think, you know, they didn't get that right, but they'll take a lot of confidence in knowing that they can. If they get it right, a little bit better, you know, they don't have to do much better, but if they get it right, they'll back themselves, knowing that experience that they had, that they should have won that game, give them belief going into that semi-final, final stage against, like, a Chiefs Manawa.
I think they're frustrated.
Mm.
That was there. That'll frustrate 100%. Them. Like, you know, just I was sitting next to the Blues coaching box, and you could sense a hell of a lot of frustration because they just, it was their moment.
Yeah. Now, we did have a request online for people overseas who are trying to figure out what's going on within Opiki for where these franchises are from. So the Blues women are with the Blues out of Auckland. The Poa, they're the Hurricanes team out of Wellington. Chiefs Manawa, the Chiefs team, obviously based out of Hamilton. And then Matatu is a combination of the Highlanders and the Crusaders. So that's, for the overseas viewers, the makeup of these four teams within Opiki. There was a question online, so appreciate that question. It's good to clear those things up and make it easier to follow. Super Rugby Tipping. Please join our Super Rugby Tipping competition, our league, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. It was a bloodbath on the weekend. Didn't go well for a lot of people, apart from a bloke called Delta Hurricanes.
I can't believe
who got five
right. How's he done it?
That is unbelievable.
Nah, how have you done it? You must have two. You must have two.
And I know it's not luck the way that, because I forgot to make my picks and I only got two. And I think if I'd made my picks, I would have only got two anyway. It just randomly went the other way. Yeah. but it had to have been choices. It can't have been luck of the draw.
No. Five. I just would love to know which one he missed. Because if he's picked the Reds, it's a hell of a pick.
Yeah.
Hurricanes I can get, that was always going to be 50-50, but that sort of Reds win, I think it caught everyone by surprise.
Yeah.
I suppose the Hurricanes as well.
Right. Now, if you win our Super Rugby Tipping competition, at the end of the year, we'll get you on the show. Let's have a look at who we're picking this week. Bryn, the Crusaders against the Hurricanes. Crusaders at home. Does the winless streak end now?
If they can't fix up the areas that we did talk around with their set piece and the execution areas and not being able to make as many mistakes, they have shown in that Chiefs game that when they do get it right, there's belief that they can get it done. So the Hurricanes will be buoyed with their start and being the top of the table and being undefeated. But I'd like to think that the Crusaders will get a few things right and be a better result. So, yeah, I'm hoping.
Is that glass? it's more than half full, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I'm going to go to the Canes purely. We didn't touch on it before, but Stephen Petafetta had 19 carries. That's a high carry count for a first receiver, and that's purely from that rush defence that Corey Jane loves and really gets in that eye line. First receivers push them back where they want, take them out of the game, and it just stems the flow. So if Kemera or Harvili is at 10, that'll be the manipulation of that, especially early with potential kicking game, will be crucial if they are to win this. Because that, for me, it was a big defensive win and a big reason why the Canes sort of stunted the flow of the Blues. So I think they'll get it done against the Crusaders.
Cool. Rebels against the Reds.
Reds.
Reds all day.
Reds.
Reds.
How did you have to think about that?
Well, the Rebels have got two wins, admittedly against two pretty average teams. But they are currently sitting in fourth place on the table.
They will have to be much, much better to beat the Reds.
Yeah, they will do. OK, Force against Minor Pacifica.
I lost faith in Minor Pacifica.
Yeah. I picked the Force on the week. I picked the Minor on the weekend, and I just think, just losing faith in the fact that they give you a little bit of confidence with that result over the draw, but then I think, logistically, there's just a lot of stuff off the field, and I think the travel factor, and I just think the Force have been in and around there for the games. I just think, until I can see them one up being, one or two games, and they show more improvement, just hard to pick them. So I'm going to go the Force.
Highlanders got up against the Tars. Yeah, Tars again were relatively impressive.
They were very good statistically as well.
Yeah. Their chances at home against the Brumbies appear to be pretty good.
Oh, yeah. I think the Hollands, I don't know what's up with the Brumbies. A little bit like the Crusaders. It's just very uncharacteristic the way they're playing these games. And you look at the team, it's not much shift.
Yeah.
Not much change. I just don't know. Their mojo just is not there. Mm. It was the same in pre-season. They just, I don't know. The Brumbies just, and I think travelling under the roof. You heard the after match interview straight away. They're like, we can't wait to get back to under the roof. They just love playing there. So
yeah, Highlanders for you, Bryn.
Yeah, I'm going the same. Yeah, I think a great result. Obviously, would have been obviously wanted to have it a little bit better in terms of the result, but in terms of the how much they won by. But to get a result in Sydney against the Waratahs for a team that probably hasn't won a lot in the last 12 to 24 months, it's a great result for them, and I think they'll continue to keep getting better, especially being at home with Patrick Fakatawa. AJ Faleanga, I think, was awesome when he came on and his injection. So, yeah, I think they're making some good inroads for the season with the Highlanders, so I'm going to pick them this week.
Okay, so I'm expecting you to go Chiefs v Drua.
That's in Hamilton, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, if that was in Fiji, I'd pick them. But nah, I don't get it done against the
Chiefs. Chiefs for me.
Chiefs for you. And the Tars versus the Blues. This is Blues, but not a straightforward pick.
No. No, not after last week, I don't think. But I do think that bench situation played a lot, and as you know, it's more respect to the Canes that, as I said, they shut Stevie down quite well, who's been in good form. So it'll be interesting what the team looks like. Do those players, because they're both key players, do they pass the HIA two and three to allow them to play? If not, it'll be interesting to see the makeup of the teams. It's definitely 50-50, I think, but. Yeah. I'm just being honest, I will pick the Blues.
Because you love the Blues. Bryn, you don't... Former Blues player, but not the same love for the Blues.
I think we've done this podcast for 5 years now. I don't think Gyp's ever gone against the Blues ever in five games.
But I am open about that. I'm never going to do it. I will be factual. Just like I picked the Blues against the Manawa, but I said the Manawa will win.
Yeah.
But I'm picking the Blues.
Have you picked against the All Blacks?
No.
You haven't?
I don't think so.
Bryn's picked against the All Blacks.
Oh, you hit once.
Yeah, did you have once?
I think we did once in South Africa.
Oh, and then they won.
And then they won, yeah. Before Ellis Park.
Yeah,
so you're never going to do that again.
Oh, never.
we'll call you the motivator, James Parsons.
Well, I tell you what, I've motivated the Tars. Darren Coleman will be calling me directly if they win this weekend. Good Lord.
I'm going Blues.
You're going Blues. Okay, righty. Okay. Well, that's that sorted. Please get on board with our tipping comp at tipping.super.rugby. And hey, if you can beat Delta Hurricanes, who's currently on 15 over the course of 16 weeks, you're going to be a pretty damn good picker, because those picks on the weekend were
freakish.
Something else. So thank you very much for joining us once again on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. We've had lots of questions come in on the email and within the YouTube comment section. Can't get to all of them, but we will try to throw them in as we go within the context of the conversations. We had questions about AI refereeing, questions about identification process in New Zealand when England are taking all these young guys like Ethan Root, and questions about the size of the bench, which I think is one we should get to next week when we've got a little bit of time, because it's a really interesting one from Drew Muir. So we'll get to that as soon as we can. Thank you very much for joining us on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. You can catch us on all Sky platforms. You can catch us on YouTube. You can catch us on Rugby Pass. Rugby Pass TV as well from this week onwards. So there's another platform for you to get us on your television. Mm. So expanding as much as we can. Thank you very much to James Parsons.
Thank you, Ross.
Once again, appreciate your time, and to Bryn Hall as well. Thank you, mate. All the best. And he's out. And we're out. Thank you very much for joining us. Mā te wā.